This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You know, the United States government is making a decision in these sanctions to say that we do not recognize these authorities as legitimate government.
That's Daniel Izenga, a researcher at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, on new U.S. sanctions against some officials in Mali. Details coming up. Also, suspected Islamic State-affiliated extremists kill 32 people in northeast Nigeria, and almost 800 migrants have drowned off Tunisia in the first half of this year. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Chaos hit the center of Niger capital Niamey as the country's army command on Thursday declared its support for a coup carried out the previous day by soldiers of the Presidential Guard, saying its priority was to avoid destabilizing the country. Reuters news reporter Olivier Chen has more.
Cars and buildings were set on fire in Niger's capital Niamey on Thursday, after hundreds of supporters of a coup gathered in front of the ruling party headquarters. Young men looted motorbikes, chairs and other supplies from the building. Other demonstrators waved Russian flags and chanted anti-French slogans, echoing a growing wave of resentment towards former colonial power France and its influence in the Sahel region. The demonstrations came as Niger's army command declared support for the coup carried out the previous day by soldiers of the Presidential Guard. Army Colonel Amadou Adraman announced on state television that all political party activities have been suspended. A group of soldiers announced in a late-night televised address that they stripped President Mohamed Bazoum of power. Juntas in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso have grown closer to Russia since they took charge in 2020 and 2022, respectively. They cut ties with traditional Western allies. Niger's role had become increasingly important for Western powers, helping fight a violent insurgency in the region. In a social media posting on Thursday morning, Bazoum vowed to protect hard-won democratic gains. In separate comments on Thursday, the head of African Union Azali Assoumani condemned the coup and called for Bazoum's release.
That was Olivier Chan with Reuters News. The military coup has raised fears that instability in its Sahel neighbors may spread further. Niger is a key Western ally in the fight against Islamist militancy in West Africa, where Islamic extremist groups have been expanding their influence. More than 1,000 U.S. troops are based there, and a drone base in the north is part of a counter-terrorism effort in the Sahel. The United States and European Union have condemned the coup. Soldiers in Niger announced a coup late last night, as we just reported, and closed the country's borders after members of the Presidential Guard held President Mohamed Bazoum all day inside the presidential palace. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who visited Niger in March, said he spoke with Bazoum and said the U.S. strongly supports him as the democratically elected president of the country. Michael Shorkin, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and an expert on the Sahel, points out to VOA's Carol Van Dam that Niger is a key ally of the U.S. in West Africa.
President Bazoum has been one of the most effective leaders in the area, if not the most effective leaders. He's somebody who, by many standards, has been doing all the right things in terms of trying to deal with the country's vast problems and working effectively with Niger's many Western security partners, including France and the United States. And from that point of view, also, he's been an ideal partner for the West because he's been effective and also because he's democratically elected. So he's got a lot of legitimacy. He's exactly the kind of person that outside of the Western partners want to be working with. A coup removes from the region a democratically elected and effective civilian official replacing it with, first of all, a necessary period of uncertainty as the Nigerian have to figure out what to do and make all the next steps, which is in and of itself a very bad thing, given the fact that Niger is already basically dealing with several crises. This is a very bad time to be going through this kind of phase of uncertainty. And also it's a huge blow to the West, which has really been turning to Niger and to Bazoum as sort of like its last effort to try to shape events in the Sahel, as the Sahel otherwise has been swirling down the drain.
So if this democratically elected president is, like you say, doing the right things from the outside world and the international community can see, why is this even happening?
We don't really know why it's happening, and the reasons could be many. This could be about pay. This could be because Bazoum simply snubbed socially the characters who are leading the putsch. This could be because, I don't know, because they want tacos served every Tuesday in the cafeteria. We don't really know. But just sort of looking at what happened in Mali and Burkina Faso next door, we see that there's legitimate frustration on the part of many people for the pace of change, the pace of improvement, the extent to things are going their way. And part of the challenge in a country like Niger is, even if you have the best people doing the best things and doing all the right things, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to prevail, or it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to prevail anytime soon, given the nature of the kinds of problems that Niger has. In that context, a lot of Nigerian, just like Burkinabe and Malian, are frustrated. And it's easy to imagine how, and I believe this was the case in Mali and Burkina Faso, how some senior officer in the Nigerian government could, out of frustration, think either, I could do better, so I'm going to do this, or, I see an opportunity here, then, and I could take advantage of this situation to seize power for myself.
So it could be an individual general's
personal ambition,
desire for power. Yeah.
Or, I mean, but they'll never be couched as such. Nobody ever takes over, and says that I did it for my own personal power. The whoever this is, and, if they succeed, they're going to couch their actions in terms of saving their country, et cetera, et cetera. That's what they're going to say. I don't mean to say that there won't be any truth to that. It could be some combination. It could really be purely out of some, in my view, misguided sense of patriotism that they need to intervene to save the country from the abyss. We really just don't know.
That was Michael Shorkin, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and an expert on the Sahel, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. With a worrying number of coups in Africa in the last few years, VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed with Joseph Siegel, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, how a remedy is needed for the spate of military takeovers.
We've seen that when one coup is tolerated, then it opens the door for other coups, and it sends a signal to military actors who may have visions of becoming head of state that this is a viable means of seizing power. And so it's important to close that door and to signal very clearly that that is not an option. It's not legitimate. It's not going to be validated. It's not going to be recognized within Africa and by the international community. Now, getting to that place is a challenge. How do you ensure that people who are authorized to bear arms don't then use that power to seize power for themselves? And this is why there's such an emphasis on civil-military relations and really instituting those norms. It really underscores the importance of military professionalism. The other part of what we've seen and why we've seen the increase in coups in Africa has been there's a growing politicization of militaries. Once that politicization process has begun, then the military actors don't see the barrier, they don't see the dark line between what an apolitical military does and what political actors do. And so they're more prone to engaging in politics and more susceptible to engaging in coups. And I think it's notable that in nearly all the coups that we have seen, they've come from special forces or presidential guards. So these are elite units within the militaries that have been more subject to that politicization process.
The president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria said African leaders must disincentivize coups and called on all African leaders at all levels to make concerted efforts in respecting the tenets of democracy and the rule of law in order to ensure political stability on the continent. Is there a roadmap to be adopted to achieve this goal?
I think the statement by President Tinubu is very welcomed and important, and along with the recent initiative for the creation of the African Facility for Inclusive Transitions in Africa, it's demonstrating there's a recommitment to leadership on upholding democratic norms on the continent. And I think that leadership has been missing. You know, it's been missing on the continent. It's been missing in the regional economic communities. It's been missing internationally. I think collectively, democracy proponents have taken their eye off the ball. And I think there has been an expectation that, you know, democracy was on its way. We can focus on our things without realizing that it takes a lot of work and time to build democratic institutions, especially in places that don't have those traditions, and especially in countries that, you know, don't have a lot of resources. And so there are constantly going to be stresses and strains on the political system. So I think the takeaway is that these norms are not self-enforcing. They require individuals, they require governments, they require civil society leaders and other institutions to uphold these norms. Unfortunately, in Africa, there's a history of tolerating extra-constitutional seizures of power, and it becomes accepted as a way of succession. And I think that is what needs to be resisted. You know, we've seen the instability that comes from coups and extra-constitutional seizures of power. And so I think really President Tinubu's statement and the recent actions from the African Union are a clarion call to, you know, reassert the aspirations of many Africans to strengthen democracy on the continent. And that requires strengthening the institutions and the norms that go with that.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Almost 800 migrants drowned off Tunisia in the first half of this year as they tried to reach Europe by boat. A National Guard spokesman told the French news agency AFP yesterday that 789 bodies were recovered from the Mediterranean, including 102 Tunisians. Hussein Eden Jababli told AFP that between January 1st and June 20th, a total of 34,290 migrants, almost all from sub-Saharan Africa, were intercepted and rescued, sharply up from 9,217 over the same period last year. He said Coast Guard units carried out 1,310 operations in the first 6 months, more than double the total for that period last year. The International Organization for Migration says the attempted journeys across the central Mediterranean have claimed more than 20,000 lives since 2014. The United States imposed sanctions on several top Malian officials this week, saying they facilitated activities of the Wagner Group, the Russian mercenary unit that recently staged a brief mutiny against Russian President Vladimir Putin. Analysts say the sanctions are meant to send a message to the Malian government. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako.
Mali's military government Wednesday criticized the sanctions on high-ranking members of the army accused of facilitating Wagner Group activities in the country as Mali continues its decade-long fight against Islamist militants. A statement was read on state TV station ORTM by presenter Ma Kamara and later posted to the station's Facebook page. She says, these new measures, contrary to international law, which we strongly condemn, add to the long list of aggressive measures, acts of intimidation, blackmail, and hostile campaigns against Mali. The statement also accused the United States of having actively contributed to the spread of terrorism and weapons in the Sahel. On Monday, the U.S. Department of the Treasury announced the travel and financial sanctions against Mali's Minister of Defense, Colonel Sadio Camara, as well as Colonel Alu Bouadjara, Mali's Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and Colonel Adama Bagayoko, the Malian Air Force Deputy Chief of Staff. The statement says the officers were sanctioned for facilitating the deployment and expansion of the Wagner Group's activities in Mali. Mali has been under military rule since a 2020 coup, and Wagner has been present in the country since 2021, assisting the junta. The U.S. sanctioned the head of Wagner in Mali in May after the United Nations released a report on a 2022 massacre in Moura, Mali, allegedly committed by the Malian army working with Wagner soldiers. Daniel Isinga, a researcher at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, spoke via a messaging application about the sanctions. He says the sanctions will add a layer of scrutiny for any U.S. person or anyone engaged with the U.S. financial system wishing to do business in Mali or with the Malian government, but that the sanctions are also largely symbolic.
This is really about recognition. You know, the United States government is making a decision in these sanctions to say that we do not recognize these authorities as legitimate government. In fact, we are sanctioning them and refusing to do business with them because they have acted in a way that is contrary to the interests of Malian citizens.
The junta has widespread support in Bamako and in much of southern Mali, but several outspoken critics of the government have been arrested. Additionally, reporting on the army's alleged participation in massacres and extrajudicial killings in the center and north of the country has been censored. The military government took France 24 and Radio France International off the air in Mali after they reported on another massacre, this one around the Diabali area of central Mali in 2022. Authorities also asked the UN peacekeeping mission to Mali, MINUSMA, to leave the country following a report this past May from the UN Human Rights Office on the Moura incident. Khalilu Sidibe, political analyst and professor of political science and international relations in Bamako, told VOA that he considers the Malian government response measured compared to past actions towards France. During a months-long diplomatic falling out with France, the Malian government expelled the French ambassador, asked French troops to leave the country, and accused France of spying. CDB says that the U.S. remains one of Mali's largest development partners, and he believes relations between the two countries and popular views on the U.S. and Mali are not likely to worsen significantly because of the sanctions. Malian public opinion is not going to change suddenly, he says, because these sanctions don't target the population directly, they target certain leaders. Malian leaders, including interim President Assimi Goïta, went to St. Petersburg, Russia this week for an African Leaders Summit. Mali has received several shipments of weapons and equipment from Russia since the junta took over in 2020. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Yiswuhibi in Washington. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Suspected Islamic State-affiliated extremists have killed 32 people, including 25 herders, in two attacks in northeast Nigeria's Borno State. The attacks happened on Tuesday in the Lake Chad area, where the Islamic State West Africa province, ISWAP, controls swaths of territory. Anti-jihadist militia told the French news agency AFP today that in the first attack, ISWAP fighters, riding in pairs on more than a dozen motorcycles, killed 25 Fulani herders. The Islamic extremists had ordered them to vacate the area, accusing them of passing information about militant activities to the military. Extremists have recently intensified their attacks, mostly on farmers working in their fields in the ongoing rainy season. Some African leaders are in Russia for a summit with President Vladimir Putin as he seeks allies amid the fighting in Ukraine. The Kremlin accused Western powers of outrageous efforts to pressure other African heads of state not to attend. Putin has billed the two-day summit that opened today in St. Petersburg as a major event that would help bolster ties with a continent of 1.3 billion people that is increasingly assertive on the global stage. For further information and clarification on the summit, I talked with New York-based lead managing editor of VOA's Russia service, Misha Gutkin.
Well, we should note that there are not so many actual leaders from African states in St. Petersburg this time as there were during the first Russia-Africa summit in 2019. I think African leaders are being careful in light of Russia's war against Ukraine, and they think that, some of them at least, think that it may be safer to stay home and to send a representative to the summit. So, but President Putin is trying to extend his influence in Africa and trying to find new allies and strengthen relationships with some of the allies that he does have in Africa. So we'll see how this plays out.
And you're right, Misha, the attendance is very low, but the Kremlin is accusing Western powers of outrageous efforts to pressure African heads of state not to attend.
But like I said, the situation has changed since the first summit in 2019. And the main change is Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine, Western attempts to isolate Russia, to sanction Russia, to sanction some of the countries and entities that are helping Russia in this military efforts. So I think, like I mentioned before, some of the African leaders decided that it would be safer to take a more careful position, to take a more careful approach to ties with Russia.
Putin also is pledging free grain to low-income African countries, assuring these countries that Russia is capable of replacing Ukraine grain both on a commercial and free-of-charge basis. You think that is feasible?
I would not be surprised if it were. I think President Putin pledged to supply free grain to six countries, and among them are more traditional sort of Russian allies in Africa, like Zimbabwe and Mali. But also the six countries include Somalia, which, as we know, is a very poor country, but it has a security relationship with the United States. So that's an interesting attempt by President Putin to sort of get inroads into Somalia. So I think this will be positively received in some of the African capitals. Mm-hmm. And I would also note that African countries have not been criticizing Russia for example, withdrawing from the Black Sea Grain Initiative. Yesterday, there was a Security Council meeting at the United Nations where the Grain Initiative was discussed and Russian withdrawal was sharply criticized by Western countries. But African countries represented on the Security Council refrained from such criticism.
Also, Misha, on the agenda is the issue that will likely be raised, and that is the fate of Russia's Wagner military company led by Yevgeny Prigozhin, following its brief rebellion against the Kremlin last month. Wagner's future will be an urgent issue for countries like Sudan, Mali, and others who have signed contracts with the mercenary group in exchange for natural resources.
Yes, and that situation seems to be unsettled and unfolding as we speak. There are reports in social media and some of the Russian media that Yevgeny Prigozhin is, in fact, in St. Petersburg today and has been making the rounds and meeting some of the representatives of African countries present there. So there were some reports in Russia that activities of the Wagner Group in Africa will be reformatted and probably more controlled and aligned with the Russian state.
That was Misha Gutkin, the New York-based lead managing editor of VOA's Russia service, speaking with me from New York. A And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.